This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Excited to be on with you this morning for the next 2 hours. Rick DiPietro is going to join us in about 30 minutes to talk about the Islanders and the Capitals. Islanders do win that first game of the series 4-2, and it got pretty heated, that's for sure. You know, some penalties, some sloppy play. And as we know, the Caps went up 2-0, but the Islanders came back, scored four straight, roughed some people up. And here we are. Game two is Friday at 8 o'clock. So excited to have Rick DiPietro on. Also, other teams, obviously, other series that are taking place. Who does Rick see winning this whole damn thing in those two bubbles in Canada? Also, Rich Cimini is going to be joining us at 10 o'clock today to talk about the Jets. A lot of storylines surrounding there. Lev Bell, what type of season can we realistically anticipate from him this season? Everything we're hearing is that he looks good, he feels good. He came out yesterday. We'll play some clips, what he had to say in regard to his relationship with Adam Gase. He's like, I don't understand why everybody's making such a big deal about, you know, my relationship with Adam Gase as if it's a negative thing. I love Adam Gase. He's a great leader of men. Okay. All right. We believe you. Very interesting in regard to like how the media is covering teams, you know, so I guess Friday will be the first practice that media can attend. And also, I want to say coming up this weekend, Monday will be the first padded practice. Can we marinate in that for a minute? That Monday will be the first padded practice. And I'm also curious to find out from Rich Cimini how many padded practices the Jets anticipate to have. I want to say, Ray, was it like confirmed that it's going to be like no more than seven padded practices for these teams before regular season game one?
I'd be lying if I told you for sure, but I think it's in that ballpark.
Oh, it's ridiculous. This is just ridiculous. People, what can we on it? Like, I can't. Like, what can we realistically expect from NFL teams with seven padded practices? And probably, let's be honest, those padded practices, they're padded, but they're playing with flags is probably what's happening. Let's be honest. Do you know how many injuries, soft tissue injuries I anticipate the NFL to experience and players to experience this year, because their bodies are just not going to be ready? A ton. I know we sit here and we talk about COVID-19 and, you know, what players potentially can contract it and how's that going to work? And then are they going to be put on the shelf for 14 days? But I don't think enough is being discussed. Like, in order to play football and be in football shape, your body needs to experience physicality. Your body needs to understand what that entails and how it deals with physicality. That's what football shape means. These dudes aren't even going to be in football shape probably for the first 3 to 4 weeks of the season. So I just don't get it. And this is hard for me because, you know anything about me, I live, eat, sleep, breathe, you name it, football. Like, it's my life. It's my love. It's my passion. It's my joy. I'm so torn in regard to the season. So I'm actually looking forward to having Rich Cimini on. We'll get an update with him in regard to the Jets. Also, a little bit later on the show, I want to play for you the Dallas Cowboys. Jerry Jones and Dak Prescott spoke to the media yesterday, and a few things. Well, Jerry Jones is not sharing his 2020. What he would like to see his team, or what he's telling his player to do when it comes to the national anthem. He said that he's spoken to President Trump and a number of players, current players, former players, in regard to what to do. So we'll see what happens there. That should be interesting. But more importantly, Dak Prescott came out and said something very, very negative in regard to the offense that he has run, has been a part of for the past few years, and really took a shot at Jason Garrett, who, of course, as we know now, is the offensive coordinator for the Giants. So I do want to dive into that as well. And yesterday, as we ended the show, and Alan Hahn began the show, the Big 12 press conference was taking place. And So their decision, the Big 12, as we know right now, the MAC, the Mountain West, the Big 10, and the Pac-12 have all decided to postpone their seasons to the spring. Okay, this is what we know. As of right now, the Big 12 came out and they said they are moving forward as if they are going to play. Now, keep in mind, their season is expected to start on September 26th. The ACC, the SEC, the Sun Belt, they as well have said that they are going to move forward and they are going to play in the fall as well. So where it stands right now is you've got 53 teams that are anticipating to move their football season to the spring. And you have 77 teams in college football that are willing to play in the fall. Okay, that's where it stands right now. Now, it doesn't mean that as we get closer to September, that the Big 12 or the ACC or the SEC, which I highly doubt the SEC will not try to. I think they're hell-bent on trying to play. But, you know, I was watching Get Up this morning, and Heather Dinich was on, and Feinbaum was on, and I thought it was interesting. They were talking to Greeny, and we touched on this yesterday. It's like why is it that all these different conferences are coming up with different game plans based on what the quote-unquote scientists are telling them? And as I said yesterday, it's kind of like sport imitates life, right? Like, I'm in following the story and in listening to, you know, what's being reported and what the commissioners are saying. It's kind of like the NCAA and these five power conferences. It's like it's become a reflection of America, hasn't it? In a sense. You know, Florida governor, oh, we're keeping our beaches open. Nobody has to wear masks. Up here in New York and New Jersey, you have to wear masks. Heck, I live in Hoboken. If I'm walking around Hoboken without a mask, I can get fined $250. $250. If a police officer here in Hoboken decides to, write me up, that happens here. Not the case in Florida. And so we're seeing a reflection of America with these power conferences. You know, the Pac-12 out west, very liberal. Doctors are worried about not only just the testing and being able to get the testing and the results back as quickly so they could, if there's a contraction, somebody contracts it, finding where that where they got contracted and being able to hone in on it, let alone the COVID rate still increasing out there in the West. In California, Arizona, so we're putting it on hold. Big Ten, apparently they're worried about what could happen. They're listening to their scientists, and they're worrying about what could happen. And meanwhile, the ACC and the SEC and those conferences that are deciding to, we're going to move along as planned. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that as we get closer to that September start date, whether it's September 5th, September 26th, whatever the case may be, they could change their mind. I mean, listen, anybody could change your mind at any given time. And maybe they're going to sit and wait and see how this plays out. But, you know, I said this yesterday. I think this is why we as a country is not doing better than other countries around the world when it comes to COVID-19, is because we have these little pockets. Everybody's state is behaving differently, is putting different protocols, different rules in place. And so we as a unit, as a whole, as a country, are failing. And now we're seeing the same thing happen here in college football. It really is. So as Feinbaum said, we'll play a clip for you a little bit later. You know, he said this has become very political, and he's absolutely right. Here's my question when it comes to the decisions that are being made in college football. And one is, you know, there's no win-win situation here, right? Like, both decisions are bad decisions for the young men that are involved here. Let's be honest. You know, one group is saying, okay, we're going to play in the fall. So what are they saying? We're willing to risk our young student athletes of contracting COVID-19 and potentially having long-term heart issues because we want to play in the fall and they want to play in the fall. Those that are now anticipating to have their season in the spring are pretty much saying, you know what? We're going to push it in the spring, but now we are going to force those young athletes to play two seasons in one calendar year. No bueno. That is risking health in regard to soft tissue and a number of injuries that could happen. That is not a safe situation for those players either. Night and day. One, you're talking about a virus. The other, you're talking about, you know, ACL, MCL, whatever the case may be. So, you know, at the end of the day, there's no win-win situation here. Let's be honest. This is tough. These commissioners are definitely making their money right now in decisions that they have to make. Here's another one that I thought about, and that is, you know, do you devalue an NCAA championship this year? How can you not? And what are you going to have one championship in the fall and another in the spring? Are you going to have two champions? Are you going to crown two champions this season? Because like I said, where it stands right now, you've got 53 college teams who are willing to play in the spring. You've got 77 college teams that are willing to play in the fall. Those are substantial numbers. That's substantial competition. Now, obviously, you're not having the cream of the crop. You're not having, you know, all Power Five obviously are not playing at the same time. So do you diminish those championships? There's just so many questions here. I tell you, 800-919-3776 is the phone number. So like I said, Rick DiPietro at 9:30, Rich Cimini at 10. Also, you've got a lot going on in regard to Major League Baseball. The Mets, they take care of the Nationals last night. Pete Alonso finally looking like the Pete Alonso from last season. Doubled twice, home run, three RBIs. Heading into last night's game, he was batting 197. So now the Mets 8-11, 4-7 at home. They play later on this afternoon, by the way. It's a 1 o'clock game. David Peterson on the bump for the Mets. And they're hoping to get Cano back on Friday, just FYI. But I guess really the bigger storyline here is what's going on with the Yankees. Now, they did beat Atlanta last night 6-3. But and Ray and I were talking about, you know, the Michael Kay show yesterday, and he came out yesterday and was pretty disappointed with Judge. You know, why can't the Yankees be honest when it comes to Aaron Judge? You know, if you recall, you were watching that game in the 6, Judge gets pulled, social media goes crazy. Well, what's wrong? You know, even though Yankees were up 8-0, what's wrong with Judge? Why is he getting pulled? And of course, after the game, post-game, Booney plays it down. Why? Well, I'll tell you why. Because this is a franchise, this is an organization that has really dealt with a lot of injury to a lot of players. And this is a season, let's be honest, 60-game season. This is a season that you cannot afford. You could not afford to have the injuries that the Yankees dealt with last year. Too short a period of time. Not enough time to heal. Not enough time for a guy to get on the mend and get back. Just not. And so I would imagine that there is concern, and there is, if you're scared, say you're scared, to be transparent. Especially, A, playing in this pandemic season of a shortened season, on top of B, the history that the Yankees have had, especially as of late, in regard to injuries, and even the fact that Stanton, of course, is on the IL. Here's the positive. Clint Frazier, dude, came out last night. 3 hits, home run, 2 RBIs. My question is, why isn't this dude an everyday player? Is it because he doesn't necessarily fit the brand of the Yankees? Not as polished, a little edgy, hasn't always walked the line, didn't want to cut the hair, whatever the case may be. I don't understand. Every time this dude is called up, he delivers. And I know that the topic of conversation or the debate is him or Brent Gardner. And I understand what Gardner does in that clubhouse and what he means as a veteran and a leader, especially since CeCe's not there this season. And I understand that in a pandemic environment where you need to rely on your veterans to step up and keep everybody in lock and step. Look what's going on with the Cubs. 12-3. You know, and different sport, but same comment. Joe Judge came out last week and said, you know the teams that are going to be successful in the NFL? Teams that are going to stay healthy. And how are teams going to stay healthy, especially in the NFL, when they're letting their players go home to their families? It's lock and step. It's being committed to your franchise. It's being committed to your organization. It's being accountable to your teammates and doing the right thing. And I'll say it again, Buster only, quote unquote, live like monks throughout the season. Live like monks during this pandemic. This is what you need to do to stay healthy. Make sure that you don't contract COVID-19. Make sure you don't bring it into your clubhouse. And that's exactly what the Cubs are doing. They are feeling good. Right now, 95% chance of making it to the postseason. Why? They're going up against teams that did not lock in step with one another. Cleveland, the Cardinals, the Marlins, the Reds. This is what's important. So I understand, you know, and I want to imagine, you know, having veteran guys in there that are going to make sure that teammates are going to be held accountable. Like, I look, Gardner, there is a value in that, right? Gardner, I think, is that guy for the Yankees in that clubhouse. But there has to be a way to get Clint Frazier up here and active and attractive every day. I'm sure Yankee fans feel the same way I do.
I don't know the name of the epidemiologist that Bowlesby is using, but I hope he'll call the White House and whatever person that is called or his name, I hope he becomes the new CDC director, because the CDC hasn't been able to figure out this virus in 5 months, so I don't know how the Big 12 has figured it out. Greeny, this is about politics, local politics. Big 10 and the Pac-12 looked around at their constituency and they made a quick decision. The SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12, Bowlesby included, are listening to not only their presidents, but to their governmental leaders. And right now, I think they're pushing them to get as close to September 26 as possible. That is still like climbing Mount Everest, but it's a good game to play. And there's also another game going on, and that's the Game of Thrones between the Power Five commissioners. And they have already eliminated Kevin Warren of the Big Ten and Larry Scott of the Pac-12. So the remaining three are still alive for the crown.
Of course, Greeny needed a little bit more clarification. Anytime anybody compares anything to Game of Thrones, I want more clarification. This is what Paul had to say.
I can't say the word on a family television show, but this is a macho game going on, Greeny. It's who can outlast the other one, who can look the best when it's all over. And it doesn't mean anything in the macro sense of whether we're going to have college football or not, but it's about trying to gain power in this rudderless ship called college football.
Again, Paul Feinbaum joining Greeny on GetUp, 800-919-3776. Sport imitating life, life imitating sport, microcosm of what we're going through right now in America. Let's go to Mike in Long Island. Mike, you're up.
Hi, Anita. Thank you for taking my call.
Good morning.
I just wanted to say, good morning. I think that this notion that the conferences are saying that they're looking out for the best interest of the players' safety by canceling the fall season, I think that's a little hypocritical if they are going to plan on playing in the spring like they're saying, because that would mean you're having late teens, early 20s people playing 25 football games in a calendar year unless you just had to permanently football a spring sport. And if you look at...
did we just lose Mike? Unfortunately. Mike, sorry, if you can, try to call back. Ira, hold on one second. I'm going to get to you in just a second. I just want to share with folks, like, you know, what does that mean in regards? Here's, well, let me preface by saying this. I highly doubt the NCAA is going to have spring football. First of all, I think this has been postponed, and unfortunately, I think the season will be postponed for those teams that don't, those programs who don't play now. I pray to God that I'm wrong. I just don't. I think as we get closer to the spring, I think our situation is going to get worse. I think the only way our situation, I don't mean to be a negative Nelly, I'm just trying to be a realist here. I think our only way that our situation gets better is if we have a vaccine. Okay. So what does this mean? How does this affect the NFL? In reading a very excellent article that's up on ESPN right now, a few things. Number one, the NFL will consider having games not just on Saturday, but on Friday as well. There is a chance that we will have football on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Just marinate NFL football. Just marinate in that for a minute. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And it's keep in mind, there are teams, NFL teams are discussing not staying over in select cities. So traveling the same day they play. And so how crucial that will be if the NFL has games in the 4 o'clock, if not 8 o'clock hours. So that way you have it, you give a team, if they're going to travel the same day, they have the opportunity to travel to that city, arrive there in the morning, get situated, get acclimated to the time change, whatever the case may be, and be ready to play. So that there is a chance that the majority of, if there is no college football this fall, there is a chance that the NFL will be playing all those days, let alone having a lot more evening games, especially if teams are going to be traveling the same day they play. This will not affect, from what I'm reading, from what I'm understanding, this will not affect the NFL draft. Now, based on the new collective bargaining agreement, the draft date still has to happen between February 14th and June 2nd. And as we know, the draft typically happens the last week of April. Keep in mind, Major League Baseball, they're drafting while players, while baseball players are still playing. That happens. So anyway, anticipate that the NFL draft will not change. The date of the NFL draft right now is not scheduled to change. What will change? Very interesting that there could be a combine that might be moved up, like a mini combine in December, maybe. So NFL is discussing because guys are playing in the spring. You can't have the combine. So how do you get those guys there? So maybe they change the combine date and they move it up and they have like a mini combine. Maybe they have two combines. Maybe they have one combine for the players in the programs that are going to be playing in the spring. And they have another combine for those that are playing in the fall. And also, and we talked about this yesterday, chances are your top 100, 200 players more than likely will opt out and not play in the spring because it'll be too close to potentially getting drafted in the NFL and they don't want to risk any type of injury. Soft tissue injury, whatever the case may be. So that's how this decision in regard to college football will be affecting the NFL. Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira, welcome in.
Hey, good morning, Anita. How are you?
Good morning.
Boy, how nice would it be if you're talking about going to St. Elmo's for dinner at the Combine, if this all passes? That would be very nice to everybody. But, it's amazing. Tonight should have been the Jet-Giant preseason game. It's so weird to see a game, it's off the board. But I want to get to Bell, but check with Rich when he comes on. I think it's a dozen to 14 padded practices, but you have to double check with him. But I tell you, the comments that I read that Bell made yesterday, I'm really glad to see, because it looks like he's taking on a bit of a leadership role and trying to set the right example over there, which I'm surprised, but I give him credit for doing that. Between him and Gase's relationship, whatever it is. Hopefully, listen, money talks, and he's playing for a contract, because after this year, all right, I think if they cut him, they save like $9 to $10 million on a cap. There's like $4 million towards, dead money. So he's playing either to stay on with the Jets or for another team next year. And I'm going to go under the assumption, I'm going to pretend it's not realistic that they're going to play a full season. I think he could possibly have a big year if this offensive gels at some point during the year. I just wanted to get your take on that.
Yeah, I hope so. Ira, thanks for the phone call. I think there's a lot going on here for Bell. I think big disappointment from last season, whether it was his part, whether it was the offense part, whether it was Adam Gase not utilizing him properly. And that was a big storyline, not just here in New York, but across the board. Le'Veon Bell, a lot of people, you know me, fantasy football, a lot of people went out and drafted Le'Veon Bell in the first round or, you know, towards the top of the second round. And he did not deliver, far from it. So, and also I think he's got a chip on his shoulder. It's evident he's upset that Jamal Adams was traded and Jamal Adams was lobbying to get traded. And I think he's pretty upset about it. And so I think he's playing with a little anger, a little resentment for a number of reasons. Anita Marks in for the fellas this morning, DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. And without further ado, one of them joins us now, and that's Rick DiPietro. Rick, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Anita. Thank you for holding down the fort for us.
I try. It's actually so it's been interesting because I've been filling in for Chris Carlin all month. And so I had this great schedule where I'd play golf in the morning, get home around 3 o'clock in the afternoon and start prepping. And then it was on from 7 to 10. This has switched some things up a little bit. So now I'm on with you for you guys from 10 to noon. And so now it's later tea time. That's all that's changed, buddy.
Yeah. Refresh my memory. What's golf again? Since I haven't been able to pick up a club in a year.
Are you kidding? It's the only thing that's keep me set. So I'm golfing. I've taken up tennis. I'm playing tennis.
And now who's better than you?
And I'm hiking. Those three things and my dogs. So those four things have kept me sane through this insane time we're living in right now. Anyway, I hope you and your family are safe and healthy. And it's great to hear your voice.
We're all good. We're absolutely all good. Just trying to keep these maniac kids of mine busy.
God, I could sit here and have a conversation with you about homeschooling, but we won't. Let's talk about the Islanders. They take care of the Capitals 4-2. Didn't look like a sloppy play, some penalties, but they still got the job done. How'd they do it?
Well, that's not how you draw it up. I can promise you that. I mean, that's not what Barry Trotz wanted to see in the first period. I know the Capitals' power play during the regular season was kind of middle of the pack, but when you look at the amount of talent they have on that team, the last thing you want to do is put yourself in penalty trouble early in that game, and that's exactly what they did in the first period. They got away with it, made them pay in the second period. Oshie had the two goals, but then, I mean, the turning point of that game is, Eberle's goal late in that second period. Guys going to the locker room, a little bit of momentum, and then they come out in the third period. Anders Lee, first minute of the third period, ties it up, and then great play by Brock Nelson, kind of a sneaky good play. Killing the penalty, he flips it in, makes the goalie handle it. Hopey decides he wants to put it down and play it. They create the turnover, and then they get the shorthanded goal. So not how you'd want to play a team like the Washington Capitals, but 5-on-5, they were good, so they got away with it.
All right, so let's talk about Lee, right? Like, setting the tone physically, the physicality in this, right? Two fights yesterday. Definitely now this is a series that, if you weren't tuning in, now you want to tune in because of the history between these two teams and then now the expectation of how physical the series is going to be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you knew going into the series, anyone that, has watched these two teams play, you also have the storyline of Barry Trotz being, the former head coach of the Capitals winning the Stanley Cup with that team. So, both teams are familiar with each other. You can probably ask Rangers fans. They probably feel the same way Islanders fans do about Tom Wilson. He's a talented guy, but he's an agitator. He's physical. So to see, Anders Lee, who's not known as a guy who likes to drop the gloves too often, but he will, to step up the way he did was, I mean, anytime your captain decides he wants to step up and create that kind of, set that kind of tone, I mean, the bench feeds off that. And then on top of that, the hit on Backstrom. Backstrom's one of their most talented players. So to have him out for the game was, you hate to see it, obviously, but, I mean, it's clearly to the Islanders' benefit.
So what do you expect based on what you saw yesterday? And again, puck drops for them again, game two, Friday night at 8 o'clock. What do you expect in this series? I said this yesterday, going into the series, you could take the Islanders. They were +122 to win the series.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at this, these two teams, since Barry Trotz has come over and they played, they played eight times and I think it's been an even split, 4-4. So, I mean, they match up pretty well. I thought 5-on-5, the Islanders were the better team. It's tough for your best players that don't kill penalties to get into a groove. You got those guys sitting on the bench waiting for penalties to be killed, and you got a chance to see, like, when a guy like Matt Barzal gets some speed through the neutral zone, how dynamic, how creative he is, the kind of problems he causes. I would expect a much more disciplined New York Islanders team in game two. They have to be. I mean, there's no question about that. And you'll see a lot more urgency from the Capitals. it works both ways, right? Like if you spend that much time on the power play and, you know, you don't score early, it's, I don't want to say it's, you know, it's deflating, but it's not, you know, carrying over the kind of momentum that you want. So I would expect to see more urgency. I bet John Carlson will be better. I mean, that's his first game back coming off an injury. So two teams are really evenly matched, but I mean, the style of play from the Islanders, their structure, they're built for, you know, this brand, this kind of hockey, this playoff atmosphere.
All right. So in looking at some of the other series that are going on, you know, in talking to Greg Wyshynski, I have him on my gambling show quite often. You know, he was really big on Vegas and Tampa coming in. Who do you expect to win the cup this year, Rick?
Ooh, that's a great question. As far as Tampa is concerned, I think we all, you know, if you didn't watch it, you've seen the highlights of that 5 overtime game. That was a huge game for Tampa. I mean, what Tampa tried to do after what happened last year is add some grit, add some physicality to their team. Because, you know, when you get to the playoffs, I mean, all that stuff is ratcheted up. So I think for them to win a close game the way they did, it took a lot longer than they probably expected it. But I think that mentally for them is a huge step. And, you know, Vegas is loaded. If Vegas gets good goaltending, it seems like they're going to ride Robin Lehner for the moment. I mean, that top to bottom, that team is one of my favorite teams in the West. And, I mean, the team that's playing the best right now is Philly. I mean, Philly right now, as far as the East is concerned, since, you know, the restart has been the best team. And one of my other teams that I really like is Colorado. And they took care of, you know, Arizona last night.
What's your take on you know, watching this all transpire in two bubbles? You know, how do you, like, what's some of the takeaways while you're watching these series in these games, Rick?
I think the way the NHL has done it, how they set up the rinks, I think it looks great. Of course, you miss the fans, and I'm sure the players miss the fans. I mean, you've played. You know how you can feed off a crowd, that momentum, mm-hmm. how you can ride that momentum. My biggest takeaway, to be completely honest, and I was having a conversation about this last night, is for the NBA in the NHL, this is like a coach's dream come true, to have all the guys in one spot, don't have to worry about them going out. All they're doing is spending time with each other. They're back and forth to the rink. There's no travel. So, I mean, you're not getting the kind of, you know, grind that you get during, you know, a normal playoff run. And you've seen great hockey. You really have. You've seen high intensity, a lot of physicality. I've been pleasantly surprised with what I've seen.
You know, it's interesting you say that. And I know I'm going really full circle here, but follow me, because, you know, if you watched the Yankees game last night, Clint Frazier, you know, called up and of course was such a big asset, 3 hits, a home run, 2 RBIs. And I know the question in following a number of Yankee fans and in what's trending was, why isn't this guy an everyday player? And then you get into the debate and the argument in regard to Gardner being in that clubhouse and having that veteran leadership, especially during a pandemic. Then you look at the Cubs and you look at how great the Cubs are doing, and why are the Cubs doing so well? Well, they're playing a division where other teams, you know, have not really been lock and step and have not been following the protocols, like Cleveland, like the Cardinals, like Miami, like the Reds. So, you know, it's really interesting when you look at teams, and granted, like you put the NBA in a different, no pun intended, but in a different bubble, right? Because they are being bubbled. Mm-hmm. But when you look at Major League Baseball and you look at the NFL, you know, where you're really valuing teams is those that have that type of veteran leadership and the importance of them being in that locker room or being in that clubhouse, because the healthiest teams are the ones that are going to have the most success, right?
No, absolutely. You're 100% right. And I mean, I hate to even admit this, but it's the truth, and I'm not going to pretend like it's not. I mean, and you saw this with the Cleveland Indians. I mean, it's tough to trust every single person on your team that they're going to do the right thing consistently. It really is. And as far as the Gardner conversation is concerned, that's one of the things, and I'm a Mets fan, but I really love about the Yankees, is even with the advanced analytics and everything else, they want, you know, younger, cheaper. They still do put a lot of emphasis on having, you know, really good veteran leadership inside their clubhouse. And I think it pays dividends, especially in a time like this where you're gonna ask your guys to be selfless. Really, I mean, that's what it comes down to. You're gonna sacrifice the next couple months, do all the right things to make sure, you know, you're the last one standing. And I mean, when you look what the Yankees have done so far, I mean, you'd have to feel good about their chances.
Rick DiPietro joining us here on his show, DCR. Anita Markson for the fellas today here on 98.7 ESPN. In talking about the Yankees, obviously another big storyline is Aaron Judge. If you're watching the other night, pulled in the sixth, Yankees were up 8-0. So, of course, now again, you know, I always love that second screen with the social media. Everybody, oh, what's wrong with Judge? Is he injured? Booney comes out post game. No, we're fine. Just we were up. I wanted to give him a break. And then, of course, it comes out the next day that he's got lower body tightness. And Michael Kay yesterday seemed pretty disappointed that the Yankees aren't being more transparent. But here's the thing, Rick, curious to get your thoughts. Do you blame them? Like, short 60-game season due to the pandemic, there's no time for injury. And with the history of this organization being injury prone, especially what we saw last season, you know, I think there is some concern to be as transparent as maybe fans or we sports talk radio hosts would like to see them be, right?
Yeah, but I think you also have to understand, too, that people are going to blow it out of proportion just because of the history of Aaron Judge and the fact that, you know, you have Stanton on the IL already. Looks like, you know, 3 to 4 weeks before you get him back. I think people get frustrated because when you see Aaron Judge healthy, you realize how good he is and how important he is to this team, you know, going on to win a championship. So you get scared. I mean, you get nervous. And I think the last thing the Yankees want to have right now is this conversation to come back, that Aaron Judge is injury prone. And everyone just hold your breath because at some point, as good as he looks now, he's going to be hurt. And, I mean, that's a scary proposition for this team. As loaded as they are, I mean, when Aaron Judge is in right field in this lineup, I mean, this is a team that can win a World Series, and I think they all realize that.
Before we let you go, thoughts on the Rangers and how lucky they are at winning that lottery, that number one overall pick?
Yeah, it's crazy, right? I mean, I guess the one parting gift you get after you get swept is that you have the 12.5% chance to win, and mm-hmm. and you get that ping pong ball. I mean, they're set up. They really are. Second overall pick, Capo Caco, he looked good. I mean, a lot of guys didn't necessarily look great, but I thought Capo Caco looked pretty damn good. They got the goalie and everything else. I love their head coach. So now they got their choice. You know, what they decide to do with it, I think they love who's available there at number one. But, I mean, forecasting them moving forward, I mean, they're set up to have long-term success.
We had Greg Wyshynski on. Ray, the young kid out of Canada,
Alexis Lafreniere.
There you go. Alexis Lafreniere. Yeah, this is why I don't cover hockey.
French. So
let me ask you, because apparently, like, in the Canadian Youth League, he's won the MVP twice, and no other player has ever done that except Sidney. So, coming into now the NHL, if that's the case, I mean, some hefty expectations in comparison to Crosby, right?
Yeah, he's in elite company. I mean, I don't know if he's at that level. I'm not sure if he's, you know, McDavid or Sidney Crosby. Those guys are centers, which, I mean, for any, ask any, you know, general manager or coach, you love your, you know, to build your team up the middle. So, I mean, he's big, he's electrifying, he's unbelievably skilled, he can facilitate. You know, a lot of people consider him on the wing a guy that's not just a, you know, one track mind goal scorer. He makes the guys around him better. Also a guy to keep an eye on. And again, I don't know what the Rangers are looking for, if they want to go center or not, or they're going to take best player available. But Quentin Byfield, he's a center, and he's a big, you know, big kid, like a really big physical kid, really skilled. So a couple names to keep an eye on.
You know, I know the Rangers, what, about a year or 2 years ago, they send out that letter to their fans. Hey, listen, trust the process. It's going to be a while. But, boy, have they really they've lucked out the past 2 years. Unbelievable. Rick, it's great to hear your voice. I so appreciate you joining us this morning. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your week and your weekend, my friend.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Hit straight, please.
Okay. Always. All right. This Saturday, August 15th, the heavyweight title and legacies. Two legends are on the line when Stipe Miocic and Daniel Cormier, only took me 3 days, Ray, complete their trilogy at UFC 252 on ESPN+. Plus. The stage is set for an epic showdown between two of the best heavyweights of all time. Again, UFC 252 is exclusively available on ESPN+. Plus. Subscribe for $64.99 or get UFC 252 in an ESPN+ Plus annual plan. For $84.98. Sign up now at ESPNPlus.com/PPV.
Mailman?
I can't make this up. Somebody's knocking on my door right now, so I apologize. Should I answer it in live time radio? I don't think so. Hey guys. Hey. So we were gonna talk some NFL right now. Should we, I don't know what to do, Ray. What did you say? All right, let's do this. Let's listen in. This is Jerry Jones and Dak Prescott addressed the media earlier today, or I should say yesterday. Let's listen in. This is what Jerry had to say about Dak's new deal.
Dak is outstanding. He's probably one of the top people that I've been around for his age and his cumulative experience. He's one of the top people that I've been around as far as being aware, understanding. I've never heard or said anything that I didn't think Dak had necessarily weighed or heard before. We think he's outstanding. We think he's our quarterback of the future. We just couldn't get together at this particular time.
Again, Jerry Jones talking about Dak as their quarterback. I Ray, I want to bring you in here because you're a huge Dallas Cowboys fan. You know, based on the fact that they did not get the deal done in a time I think that Dak would have liked for the deal to get done, let alone the money that Dak is looking for. You know, I don't know how you can come out and say Dak is our guy. We're 100% in on Dak. And be totally honest about that in the way that they handled his deal and handled his contract.
Yeah, it doesn't really mesh with everything that's gone on over the past, I would guess, year and a half to 2 years with them, because, you know, you say he's our guy, we love him, we're going to continue to work at this. And to be fair, on the other side, Dak Prescott came out and he was very, you know, complimentary of the organization, and he didn't seem too worried, and it's a little bit reassuring that there doesn't seem to be any animosity between the two sides, at least not outwardly. But it should never have come to this point. This is something that should have gotten done at least in the last year, if not 2 years ago.
Jerry Jones went on to tell the media that COVID-19 was partially to blame for Dak's deal not getting done. Let's listen in.
I've just spent weeks and weeks, a part of this raspy voice on the phone, talking with NFL and the Players Association, weeks and weeks working through the economic consequences. And candidly, nobody knows what's going to be there next year, or the next year. And frankly, we all know that what we were talking about in Dak's case was the next year and the next year and the next year and the next year. So all of that came to bear, and this was just a less than stable time to be talking about serious, generational, if you will, to use Dak's term, dollars in an unknown period of time looking forward. That certainly was one of the issues.
Here's the thing, though, Ray. Kansas City didn't have a problem getting a deal done with, of course, Patrick Mahomes.
You took the words right out of my mouth. Like, that's nonsense. That's Jerry being a salesman. And listen, he was doing a lot of being a salesman yesterday, talking about the stadium and all. I won't get into that, but he Jerry Jones is what Jerry Jones is. And you have to, like, take half of what he says with an entire shaker of salt.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg, weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.